Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. This panel of the court has four cases on its calendar for today. We have completed oral arguments in the first three cases, and now we are ready for oral arguments in the fourth case. I will call the case. It's case number A24-0346, State of Minnesota versus Eden Arnold Sanchez. Counsel, I expect, are familiar with our procedures. They're essentially the same on this Zoom format as in the courtroom. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal argument. You should be able to see the time clock if you have the gallery view or other similar setting. And appellant's counsel then will have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal argument. Counsel for appellant, you may introduce yourself and your clients, and then you may begin.
Good morning, Your Honors, opposing counsel. And may it please the court, my name is Michelle Olson, and I represent the appellant, Eden Sanchez, in this matter. We are asking for a reversal and remand to the back to district court due to some evidentiary rulings, or in the alternative, a complete reversal due to lack of sufficiency of evidence. We believe that this is the fairest way to deal with the issues that happened during the trial and to protect Mr. Sanchez's constitutional rights to present a fair and full defense. At this time, we believe the major errors that occurred was that the district court had not allowed Mr. Sanchez to provide a complete defense by denying him the right to cross-examine specifically the complainant, but witnesses to allegations of other criminal sexual conduct that had occurred or had been alleged to have occurred by another person during the same time frame as the complainant. It was during the same police interview, and ultimately that case did not go forward. Mr. Sanchez was not allowed to present any evidence related to these issues. And due to a lack of any medical evidence or any other evidence besides testimony of witnesses, this, I believe, is more than just a mere harmless error, but a error that could have reasonably changed the outcome of the verdict. That is why we're asking for reversal. Now, specifically in regarding to these evidentiary proceedings, we would not necessarily be attacking the issues of the conduct itself, but that she had made other allegations towards other people during the same exact time frame, during the same exact dates. There were not a lot of information provided by the complainant during trial compared that matched actually the police statements that were given. Specifically, the point of the rape law statute or the rape shield law is understandable, and in most cases it is appropriate, but we do have case law that allows a defendant to attack statements that have been made, and while could be protected if it harms Mr. Sanchez's rights to a complete defense, then those must be weighed. In the district court's analysis, the court did not weigh those aspects of an evidentiary ruling and instead said there was no case law to support the request. However, again, this goes towards my client's due process rights as well as his rights to have a complete defense. Specifically under State v. Caswell, 320 Northwest 2nd, 417, which is a Minnesota Supreme Court 1982 case, the courts have allowed the defendant to offer certain evidence, and it is found to be a constitutional right. It also has specifically allowed under State v. Friend, which is 493 Northwest 2nd, 540 at page 545, which is also a Minnesota Supreme Court 1992 case, that allows him to present that and would require admission of evidence that would have otherwise been excluded. State v. Carroll also, which is a 2002 Minnesota Court of Appeals case, which is 639 Northwest 2nd, 623 at page 6, to 7 specifically states the right to present a defense includes an opportunity to develop the defendant's version of the facts so the jury may decide where the truth lies, affording a defendant the opportunity to advance his or her theory of the case by revealing an adverse witness bias or disposition to lie. Here,
Wasn't
this
your
is.
client allowed to assert that the complainant fabricated the allegations or otherwise, as you know, attack her credibility even without admission of the evidence you see to that's at issue here today?
I would say it was so limited that it would not have been real. It's not that it was absolutely denied. There was no specific ruling saying the court said he couldn't advance that position, but with how limited the attacking would have been, because the majority of the attack would have gone towards the statements that were made to the police, really limited it to the point that it would have been ineffective without that evidence there. We would not have been allowed to attack or speak to the police, from my understanding and reviewing of the order, regarding any statements of conduct by a different alleged perpetrator, because it would have been basically shielded by the statute. So it was extremely limited on what could be presented. And in this specific instance, the statements that were made by the police from the complainant didn't actually match some of it. We were allowed to attack the credibility of other witnesses and their statements to the police. Similarly, one of the witnesses claimed that she had never heard something before, didn't believe it. We were able to bring in that testimony, and that ne didn't necessarily match the jury. But the key witness, the complainant in this matter, who seems to be what the jury focused on because all of the statements were so inconsistent across the witnesses, that was more than a harmless error on this part. My client would not have been able to actually go into the specific allegations made by the complainant of what the alleged perpetrator done, which would be similar to some of the statements that I believe were made at the time of trial. Again, that would show that bias. So we believe that the district court should have allowed it. We understand, like I said, that allegations are shielded under this law, but ultimately, the constitutional right of my client to have a fair and complete defense can overrule that law, and there was no
As I
analysis.
understand it, there are a couple of exceptions to the rape shield law to make ensure that a defendant's rights are protected. Are you arguing that this is one of those cases where it fit an exception?
Most of the exceptions relate to incidents where it would either be consensual or they. My client wouldn't necessarily meet into that exception. I don't believe I don't believe there is a direct exception that would have applied to my client based on this issue, because again, the alternative perpetrator defense was a little different here. We weren't saying that that something actually happened. We were attacking the credibility, saying that she was lying and that she didn't just lie about my client, she was also lying about multiple clients. So it wouldn't have fit the exception under the statute. It also wouldn't have fit neatly into the alternative perpetrator defense. We made an argument that it
In
could
what
be
way
that.
was this evidence more probative than prejudicial then?
It was certainly more probative in that it could go to the motive to lie, the disposition to make facts, that she potentially was doing this to seek attention. It also would have helped with with presenting the facts that she was claiming that statements alleged to have been my client through Facebook messages weren't actually what they were claiming to be, because she had also accused other people. This was not a situation of this is a like where she had said my client did multiple different it things to her, and then there was also a singular incident by someone else. She was saying throughout that period of time during her age that apparently she was alleging two different people were committing acts of criminal sexual conduct against her, But again, it was extremely vague. And I believe that that does make it more probative because we could go into the specifics that she was trying to claim, which goes to these allegations that she has made.
Ms. Olson, it seems that you're conceding that the district court did correctly interpret the rape shield law to apply to allegations of sexual, previous allegations of sexual assault. Is that true?
I would concede that allegations of sexual assault under State v. I think it's Kobau, I'm probably pronouncing it incorrectly, does apply. However, the other cases show that even with allegations or even if there was actual conduct found to have happened, that doesn't deny my client's right to present that evidence if it would better explain the facts. And that is where the district court did not make any analysis towards.
So you're using the argument that constitutionally it requires that that be introduced. Is that accurate?
Yes, to make it more clear. And we did make that argument in the court that for a complete defense and a proper defense under his constitutional rights would allow for it. We made a couple of different arguments. One that alternative perpetrator could be used, which I understand the court denied, that we believed allegations wouldn't apply, but in researching it further in this court, I would concede that we have a case that does directly on point talk about that. However, that doesn't deter the actual issue, which is under constitutional grounds, my client was not allowed to present a fair or a proper full defense, and the court should have
And the
analyzed that.
standard for that is abuse of discretion. Is that also accurate?
I believe it is when it's dealing with constitutional grounds, you and I'm sorry, I'm just pulling up, making sure I'm stating this correctly, that if you determine admission of evidence violated my client's rights of confrontation clause, which I believe here it would, because he wasn't allowed to present certain arguments and confront the witness, that is actually a de novo review, and that's State v.
Oh,
Sutter.
okay.
I do think I agree with you that it's abuse of discretion on certain grounds, but because we're attacking confrontation as well, which is his constitutional right, it would be de novo review.
I have a question about the case law that is cited concerning the constitutional right to present a complete defense, which I think is based on the Due Process Clause. I'm aware, I think some of the cases cited acknowledge the existence of the right, but nonetheless affirm. And I also think that of the cases that reverse, I think several of them reverse because or based on a finding that the evidence of another allegation is a false allegation. Goldenstein is such a case, and I think there might be a Supreme Court case as well. But I guess so. But I'm trying to narrow down the case law, and I guess I'm asking you, is there any case law where the and this is a very specific question, but I think this is our case where the constitutional right to present a complete defense has overridden the rape shield statute in a case where there's no proof that the allegation of another instance of sexual conduct is false.
Your Honor, I had looked through several cases and I could not find one directly on point with our specific facts. So I don't believe there is one. However, I believe Goldstein does apply because the fact is they didn't move forward with the case. They did not, the fact that the prosecution didn't move forward or find that there was probable enough cause to file a complaint or their decision is something that could show that it was a false allegation or at least
Well,
be
that's
allowed to
just, isn't
present
that
that.
just speculation? I mean, we're just speculating then about why something was or wasn't charged. And there certainly are plenty of times when prosecutors exercise their discretion not to charge something that potentially could have resulted in a conviction, right?
That certainly is an argument that could be made. However, the issue we have here is my client wasn't even allowed to show that this accusation that had been made had been made. understand that it is not directly on point because we don't have direct evidence that it is false. But the fact that the prosecution didn't move forward with that case is something that could have been presented again to the court to further actually explain the facts and make a decision on the truthfulness of the person based on the statements that were made by them. I am asking this court, I believe, to make something somewhat of a first impression to further analyze the law of when we have a situation where the prosecution chose not to move forward, the defendant would still have a right based on these cases to present that, to present the fact that these are differing statements. And not only that they were differing statements, but that also another person was alleged to have committed these acts and that there could be a bias or there could be a falsehood or something along those lines. And then it would be ultimately up to a jury to make those decisions. And I see I'm almost out of time, so I will, and may I finish my sentence?
Yes, I have one follow-up question, and then you may sum up. And that is, I mean, at the you filed a pre I think you filed or the defendant filed a pretrial motion to admit this type of evidence, right? Or was it the state's? I can't remember which who filed the motion, but there was a hearing on the pretrial motion. You had an opportunity, if you wished, to prove the falsity of the other allegation, but you didn't attempt to do so.
So what happened, it was kind of a two-stage. The state filed a motion in limine to bar me from, or bar Mr. Sanchez from talking about anything regarding those allegations. I then filed a motion in limine asking to present it and then made the arguments for alternative perpetrator, the constitutional grounds. And then we went into that. I would agree that I didn't specifically state that they were false, but I presented that we would be able to do some type of proof, or I should be able to attack the credibility that we believe the statements were not accurate and that they hadn't moved forward. And in summation, because we weren't allowed to present this evidence, it has created kind of a snowball effect where we believe the jury would have found differently. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you may introduce yourself and your client, and then you may begin your argument.
And may it please the court, counsel. My name is Juliana Passy, and I'm an assistant Lyon County attorney. Your honors, there was no abuse of discretion in this case with regard to excluding the sole small piece of evidence that the victim had reported another individual had sexually assaulted her on one occasion when she was a child. This fell well within the bounds of the rape shield law, and the district court did not prevent him from presenting a complete defense under in that there is no abuse of discretion in the exclusion of such evidence. I think the arguments of appellant in the brief and demonstrate that the reason for which the defense wants to introduce this evidence is for improper purposes and for improper inferences of suggesting that the victim, because she reported and that she had been sexually assaulted by more than one individual, is inherently incredible. The state believes that it is an improper inference and that the defense should not, the district court appropriately determined that the evidence was not admissible. It appears from counsel's arguments today that I don't know that there is really a statutory interpretation issue at play, so I'm going to focus on the constitutional right to present a defense. This is not one of those cases where there is that need to present this evidence in order to present a complete defense. I agree with Your Honor Judge Johnson. The most of the cases I think that I saw where there was a reversal, it was where there was evidence of falsity. Or reasonable probability of falsity of the prior allegations of sexual abuse that were kept out. In this case, the defense, it is the Goldenstein case said that there has to be a threshold determination outside the presence of the jury that a reasonable probability of falsity existed. I have reviewed, in reviewing the briefs filed by the defense, and the arguments at that motion hearing, the defense did not ask the district court to make any such determination as to a reasonable probability that the prior allegations, the allegations of the sexual assault of the other individual were false allegations, nor did the defense offer any evidence suggesting that the allegations were false. So what we're left with is the record evidence is the, I think it's a transcript of the victim's initial statement to law enforcement, where she details numerous events of being sexually assaulted by Mr. Sanchez. And then in the course of that says, and yes, on one occasion, when I was, on one occasion, my another individual also sexually assaulted me. I would push back on Ms. Olson's statements that this was an ongoing allegations of sexual abuse by the other individual. If you look at the record evidence, she says it happened one time with this other individual. But regardless, there is no evidence of falsity. The defense did not argue that before the district court. Therefore, the district court didn't rule on it. And I think we're back to, I think that's an issue that's been waived by the defense by not bringing that below and asking the district court to make that determination. But even if they did make that argument for the district court, I think we're back to where this court was in the State versus Hagerman decision that I cited in my brief, which was unpublished, of course, from this court from 2020. But in that case, the district court held that there was a reasonable probability of falsity, but the only evidence in the record was the victim's statement that they'd been sexually assaulted by a different individual. And then this court held that that was an abuse of discretion because there was no evidence of falsity and the statement of the victim was not internally inconsistent, such that it creased sua sponte, created a reasonable probability of falsity. That's exactly where we are here. The victim reports that she was sexually assaulted by her other person. She says what happened. There's no evidence of confusion, I think, is the other argument that the Mr. Sanchez makes regarding the probative value of this evidence. And there's just not any evidence of confusion in the statement of the victim when she reported this. And that's exactly what the district court held. There is no abuse of discretion in making that finding on this record where there is nothing else proffered by the defense to support that this is the victim was confused when she reported being sexually assaulted by either these two individuals or when she or that she was somehow false. The defense, it's the defense's burden to show that there is a reasonable probability of falsity, and they just didn't in this case. And so I don't think there's any abuse in discretion by the district court. The district court did, you know, I think took this issue pretty seriously and issued a thorough order, evaluating all the circumstances, evaluating the arguments of the parties. And I don't think there's an abuse of discretion. I don't think there's an ability to provide a full defense on this record in this case. The defendant doesn't have any right to introduce evidence that's either relevant or whose prejudicial effect outweighs its probative value. The only probative value of this is very, very minimal, if any. Again, I think it's just this improper inference that a victim who reports that she's been sexually assaulted by more than one person must be lying about something. That's an improper inference under the Rape Shield Law. That's what the Rape Shield Law is designed to protect against. And there's no absent a showing from the defense as to any relevance of the evidence that only goes to creating improper inferences and prejudicing the state improperly. If there was to the harmless error argument, if the court were to find any kind of error, the state believes that this is a case where the state's evidence was particularly strong. The victim testified to numerous instances of grooming behavior, some of which were observed and testified to by other people. She unequivocally testified regarding the numerous instances of being sexually penetrated by the defendant. Multiple witnesses testified that she had previously disclosed to them years before that she'd been sexually assaulted by Mr. Sanchez. And then there's the Facebook messages as well that support the allegations. So the state believes that even if this court were to find error, this is not a case where this is a case where any error in exclusion of the evidence would be harmless because the verdict was surely unattributable to the error. unless the court has any questions, I would leave it at that. The state would ask the court affirm in all respects.
It appears there are no questions. Thank you, Ms. Passy. Counsel for Ms. Olson, you have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Regarding this, the state's claim that there is an improper inference, that isn't the inference that was made by Mr. Sanchez. He is stating that because there were statements made of criminal sexual conduct by another, alleged by another, that he would be allowed to go into that information. It doesn't mean that he's saying, well, because this happened twice, therefore she must be lying about one. But in an instance where there are two allegations, there are allegations made against two individuals, and one isn't being moved forward, that he would have the ability to go into those reasonings and be able to discuss with the complainant and confront her on making those statements and what
So,
happened.
Ms. Olson, there's an argument that was made, I think both in state's brief and here today, that appellant waived any argument that in fact there was falsity in the allegations against the other possible perpetrator here. Would you agree that that's waived? And if not, why not?
I would not agree that it is waived. The parties discussed the issues and the requests made. One of them was the alternative perpetrator defense, but it was also discussed about that there could be lying or confusion. That was an argument that was made to the district court. So I don't believe that it was waived in any aspect. There
So
were.
I might be getting a little too particular here, but it seems to me that there's a difference between affirmatively saying that we believe that statements made were false or the report was false versus we believe that it's possible that the report that was made was false.
So the specifically in the memorandum of law that was discussed, there the defendant said that the state's request in its motion in limine, because again we were responding to that motion from showing the victim is lying or misidentifying him from the alleged action. So I don't again believe that there was ever a statement that he wasn't claiming that she was not only just lying about him but also lying about the other individual or in the alternative, again, which was the alternative perpetrator defense, misidentifying him as the potentially the person who did the crime. So to say that was waived or it wasn't presented isn't true. It was written in an argument. It was also argued before the district court. Again, I think what the state is attempting to do is saying, well, it's being used for a nefarious purpose, or it is being used to in an improper way. I think that goes against, again, the confrontation issue and the facts. She brought up an allegation. It was around the same time. It is a different person, and the state chose not to move forward. And there are very different reasons for doing that, but that doesn't mean that the defendant shouldn't be able to bring up these statements or confront the falsity of the report. I agree that there wasn't direct evidence that was provided to the defendant from the state that that report was false, but it seems they didn't move forward with it, and that would be something that could be presented and should have been able to be presented, but because we were limited to not even discussing what she talked about with the police or other people. It wasn't just that he couldn't that Mr. Sanchez couldn't present it to other people. It was that he couldn't even bring up that an allegation had occurred. And that really comes to the heart of the issue because you are completely cutting out parts of the police interrogation that, or not an interrogation, excuse me, the police interview that occurred, and he can't explore that, and he can't explore how the interview happened and how this allegation was kind of stated, and then other aspects were intertwined, and that goes again to developing the facts, and we believe that that was an error, and it was more than just a harmless error, and we are asking for a reversal to correct the mistake that occurred. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. Thank you to both attorneys for your arguments. The case is now submitted, and the court will issue its written opinion within 90 days. That is the last case on our oral argument calendar today, so the court is now in recess.